In the name of the Father, and the Son, and God's Holy Spirit, one God. Amen. Well, the holidays are fast approaching. I'm sure I don't need to tell you that. And that means it is time to start thinking about Christmas shopping. So I wanted to begin by telling you about a particular kind of bargain that you can get. In a lot of stores, I'm sure this is true up here, there is a section of the store where all of the merchandise is discounted. And the clue is a little tag that is on every piece of merchandise. It has two words, as is. It is a euphemistic way of saying these are damaged goods, sometimes called slightly irregular. It's the store's way of saying there is a flaw here, a zipper that doesn't zip, a button that doesn't butt. I had to have Angela help me zip my robe this morning. And they're not going to tell you where this flaw is, but when you find it, and you will find it, there is to be no whining or sniveling. You have been forewarned. There are no discounts. It's as is. So I was thinking this week, what if there was a truth in advertising law about people like this? Those of you who are single, wouldn't it be interesting if dating sites or single bars required people to wear a little tag that tells you something about the junk that is going on inside those people? Like, slightly bruised self-esteem, or mildly impaired ability to commit, or giant black hole of emotional neediness that will suck you dry. Really, if there was such a law, would anybody go on these dating sites, let alone get married? Just for a moment, I want you to sneak a glance at the people to your right and your left. Just a glance, because those people are slightly irregular. I mean that metaphorically, of course. But if you look close enough, there is an as-is tag. So don't expect perfection. There is a flaw, and if you get to know them well enough, you will find it. So don't be shocked. And there is a reason why I mentioned this particular week. Because over the next few weeks, many of us are going to be getting together with our extended families. And maybe your family, everyone in it, is just a picture of emotional maturity and mental health. But maybe not. And so it is likely that you will be around the table with some as-is people. So the question, whether we are married or single, whether we have children or grandchildren, how do you create a God-honoring home with those people who are even closest to you? Because it is very possible there will be some flaws. And it turns out that some of Jesus' most famous and often misunderstood sayings are about difficult relationships with as-is people. For example, he says, if someone strikes you on the cheek, that's an as-is behavior, you should turn the other cheek. If someone asks for your cloak, as-is, give them your shirt also. Now, it's really important when we come to those kinds of teachings to realize that Jesus is not giving us a new set of rules here that we need to obey legalistically. Rather, what Jesus typically does is he compares what it is like in God's kingdom, where God's love reigns, with what you might call conventional wisdom, the way people typically respond. So a classic example of this is in the gospel reading that Bella read to us from the 14th chapter of Luke. Jesus is speaking to a group of people who are jockeying for the best seats at the Thanksgiving table. And He says to them, there is a different way of doing this. He says to them, he turns to his host and he says, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, don't invite your friends, don't invite your brothers or relatives, your rich neighbors. If you do, they might actually invite you back and you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, instead invite the poor and the crippled, the lame and the blind, and you will eventually be blessed, he says, in the day of the resurrection. And thus, Jesus clearly says that you don't have to invite your relatives for dinner. Some of you have been looking for this verse your entire lives. You're going to leave the sanctuary. You're going to get on your telephone and you're going to say, sorry, Jesus says, you can't come for Thanksgiving. Luke 14:12. So is Jesus really saying that it is a sin to invite your relatives for dinner? Come on, just a nod of the head. I know you're Presbyterian, but you're making me a little nervous here. What's he doing? He is illustrating what life in the kingdom of God looks like and contrasting it with conventional wisdom. Conventional wisdom says, if you're going to do something nice, do it for the strategic people in your lives. Invite the boss. We know about this. None of us got where we are in life without understanding this. I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. And if you do this exclusively, or maybe even primarily, you will eventually become a calculating person, addicted to your own self-interest. Jesus isn't giving us a new set of laws here. So many people misunderstand. He's saying, in the kingdom, people sometimes do nice things for other people who have no way whatsoever of paying them back. And by way of illustrating this, he names some of those people: poor people, challenged people, people whose as-is tag is just a little more visible than others. Every once in a while, he says, in the kingdom, people forget about their own self-interest and they are just generous. They just give love. And one of the best opportunities, it turns out, to do this is with difficult people in your lives. In fact, Jesus seems to imply that it is a really good thing to have some as-is people in your life, because they will tell you about the true condition of your heart. Conventional wisdom says, judge those people. Hurt them back. Jesus says, in the kingdom, there is another way. And he is about building a community of changed lives. So, in the time I have left this morning, I want to share with you the best summary I know of Jesus' teachings about how to deal with as-is people. It comes from a counselor by the name of Henry Cloud. And Henry suggests that according to Jesus, change requires two things: grace and truth. Grace and truth. Now, grace is the gift of radical acceptance. Truth is about naming reality, especially difficult reality. And it turns out as-is people need both of these. So let's start with grace. You remember the Apostle Paul in Romans says, accept one another as Christ accepted you. How did Christ accept you? As-is, right? No strings attached. You don't have to clean up before you come to the table. While we were yet sinners, Paul says, Christ died for us. Okay, Paul says, that's the way you need to treat each other. That's grace. One of the most beautiful images I ever heard about grace came actually from Southern Ohio, a football game there. This was a high school game. It had nothing to do with yesterday's tragedy. So there was this high school player by the name of Jake Porter who suffers from a disorder called chromosomal fragile X, a medical way of saying he is cognitively challenged. But Jake loves football. So all the way through high school, he was on the team. He went to the practices. He worked out with them. Every Friday night, he got dressed in a full uniform, though he knows he will never get to play a real game. The last game of his final season, his coach, a guy by the name of Dave Franz, he wants Jake to get in a real game. So he goes over to the coach on the other sideline. He explains Jake's condition to him, and he says, "Look, I would like Jake to get in for just one play." He said, "We've been practicing this all week. The quarterback is going to hand the ball to him. He will immediately take a knee, so there's no risk. No one is going to get hurt." And the coach says, "Okay, I guess that would be fine." So they play the game. 5 seconds left. The score is 42-0. Jake's team is losing. So the coach calls timeout. He's going to put Jake in the game. The other coach comes running across the field. Everybody wonders what's happening. Maybe he has actually changed his mind. He goes over to Jake's coach and he says, "Look, I don't want Jake to just get in the game. I want Jake to score a touchdown." Which is a big deal because now, you know, they have to give up their shutout. That's a big deal. Jake's coach says, "Well, you know, we haven't practiced that. We just practiced the knee thing." But the other coach says, "You give Jake the ball and we'll all make sure that he scores." So the coach goes back to his team's huddle. He points to Jake and he says, "Big boy, you're going to the house." Jake is jumping up and down. He is so excited. The teams go back out on the field. The quarterback calls Jake's play, ISO 84. The ball is snapped. He turns and he hands it off to Jake. And what happens next will go down in Ohio football history. Jake has practiced taking a knee so many times that he starts to go down. His knee is inches from the ground, but all of his teammates begin to yell, "Don't go down!" So Jake takes a couple of steps back. He's looking at his teammates. They are all pointing to the end zone. All the coaches and the people on the sideline are pointing to the end zone. All the guys on the other team, even the referees, are pointing to the end zone. And so Jake starts to walk towards the line of scrimmage. 21 guys part like the Red Sea before Moses. And Jake starts out for the promised land. Slowly at first, but then faster and faster. Everybody on the sideline is running along with him. 49 yards. And Jake Porter scores a touchdown. People are crying in the stands. They're hugging each other. They're pounding each other on their backs. A lot of boys played in that football game. And when they get to be old men, they will remember very few of the details of any game that they ever played in. No one will ever forget the time Jake Porter scored a touchdown. That's grace. That is the power of a community to change lives. Because grace says, "You belong here. You don't have to be better. You don't have to be smarter." Grace is why sinful people flocked to Jesus and why they still do. Because grace is Jesus going to as-is people and saying, "Big boy, big girl, you're going to the house." Though we all know you are spiritually challenged. That's grace. And houses don't become homes. And holidays don't become holy days. And a church doesn't become a place of changed lives without it. But it can't be just grace. It has to be grace and truth. And where there is the appearance of grace and the absence of truth, there is real trouble. So, another story. This one's from the Old Testament. There was a guy by the name of Eli who was a priest his whole life. Eli loved God. And Eli has two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, who also became priests. But they were both corrupt. People would bring their offerings to God and they would use them to enrich themselves. They used their positions to exploit women, to seduce and to sexually mistreat them. It was really bad. And Eli knew it. He wasn't corrupt, but he knew the truth. He did have one time when he sort of made a feeble attempt at an intervention, but when that didn't succeed, he just stood on the sideline and he washed his hands. And you sort of wonder, you know, what is he thinking here? Maybe he thinks it's just a phase, they'll grow out of it. Maybe he has just a warped understanding of grace. He thinks it's always about just being nice and never confronting anybody. Maybe he just feels he needs to avoid conflict. But he just stands on the sideline and he says nothing while his two sons tear down everything he has given his life for. Sometimes people in churches have a little problem with truth. Sometimes people in the church can suffer from what you might call terminal niceness. You know, you see somebody going down the wrong path, but you don't want to say anything. We rationalize, we say, you know, I just don't want to get involved. I don't want to inflict pain. When what's really going on is, I don't want to go through that pain myself. There is a classic scene in the old movie, A Few Good Men. I'm sure some of you will remember this. Tom Cruise plays the part of the interrogating lawyer, and he is interrogating Jack Nicholson, on the stand. And it's a pretty intense interrogation. And at one point, Nicholson says, "What is it you want?" And the lawyer says, "I just want the truth." And you remember, Nicholson responds, "You can't handle the truth." Jesus said, "You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." And there is a sense in which we have to decide, do we trust Jesus or do we trust Jack? Is there somebody in your life, a friend, a family member, who needs to hear truth? Because the same apostle who said, accept each other as Christ accepted you, also said, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly as you admonish each other. That's a truth word. But here is the other side of the coin. It cannot be truth without grace. Because truth, whether it is spoken to your partner or your child or your grandchild or a friend, it is always truth for the other. And sometimes people, even people in churches, do truth-telling recreationally. But they are a little grace-impaired. You ever know anybody like that? Once a group of religious leaders came to Jesus and they had caught this woman in the act of adultery and they said, you know, the law says that we ought to stone her. What do you say? And they're holding these stones in their hands. They know the truth. They know what the law says. But they could care less about this woman. She's just a pawn in their little game with Jesus. Ever have a stone in your hand? A little judgmental attitude, a little self-righteousness going on. I wonder about that sometimes. You know, I've been in the church my whole life. I think there's nothing like the church. But I think of some of the people I have known in the church, and some of what I hear about some churches, where people were just cold. They didn't laugh. They didn't dance. There was nothing about them that radiated joy. But one thing that they did enjoy, they enjoyed passing judgment on other people. Somebody's kid would get a little wild, pick up a stone. Somebody's marriage not working out, pick up a stone. Somebody on their committee didn't follow through on something they said they were going to do, stone. And the truth, though they would never admit it, the truth is it sort of energized them, picking up stones. I don't know what it is about churches and religious people that just seems to produce so many stone throwers. But that's why this story is in the Gospels. So Jesus looks at these guys and he says, "Let the one who is without sin cast the first stone." And they all slithered away. He turns to the woman and says, "No one condemns you? Neither do I. That's grace." And then he says, "Now go and sin no more." That's grace and truth. You know, I've spent most of my life preaching in largely white congregations. If you're Presbyterian, that's sort of the way it is. But every once in a while, I get to preach in a predominantly black church. And the response is markedly different. Because if you're doing will, they give you grace. Preach it. Tell it. Keep on going. And if you're not, you get a different response. Help them, Jesus. Help them. And that's really not what you want to hear. But I was thinking, wouldn't it be great as family and as friends and as a church if we could just flood people with grace and truth? So if somebody is doing well, you're just running along on sidelines, cheering them on. And if they mess up, your response is, "Help them, Jesus." Not, "I'm going to pick up a stone." And by the way, Jesus, if you want to help them through me, I will have the courage to speak the truth in love. I will not live with that nice-looking lovelessness that stands aside and lets someone mess up and just think to myself, "Boy, I wouldn't do that. What's the matter with him?" And then go and talk about him behind his back to somebody else. Here's the secret. Every one of us carries an as-is tag. And God knew all about that and knew exactly what we needed. And that's why the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, full of grace and truth. For the law came through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. But now we're a couple of weeks ahead of ourselves in the liturgical calendar, I suppose. This is how houses become homes. And holidays become holy. This is how a church becomes a place of changed lives. Thanks be to God.